If you like audiobooks, then you need to check out today's sponsor, Audible.com. Yes, you've heard about Audible a million times, but have you taken the Audible plunge? There are 250,000 titles from leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazine and newspaper publishers, and business information providers. You can catch up on all the new hot books that you've been meaning to read on your daily commute with Audible.com. I just listened to a great book on Audible. It is called People Who Eat Darkness. I recommended it on the mini episode. It's amazing. A British journalist does an investigative report about a girl who goes missing in Japan because she was part of the hostess culture. It is amazing. The People Who Eat Darkness, get into it. Tell me what you think. I need to talk about this book to somebody, and you can do it right now on audible.com. Just for listeners of this show, they're going to offer you a 30-day free trial membership. So go to audible.com/bonkers to start your free trial today. Today's episode is brought to you by Loot Crate, the monthly subscription box for geeks, gamers, and pop culture nerds. Check it out. Every month, a box comes to your house full of shit that you want that you would probably never buy yourself. Why? Because you might be too embarrassed to. And the cool thing about Loot Crate is it themes its boxes. That's right. So for July, they're focusing on something really cool. A future dystopia. That's right. They're going to have things in this box that bring you back to films like RoboCop, Terminator 2, The Matrix, and your favorite games like BioShock Infinite and Fallout 4. You get a figure, cool collectibles, and of course, our dystopia-rific monthly tea. You only have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate. And when that cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. So go to lootcrate.com/bonkers and enter the code BONKERS, that's B-O-N-K-E-R-S, to save $3 on your new subscription today. Hey, everybody, before we start the show, a quick apology. In the mini episode, I told you we were going to watch Dragonheart. Well, I called an audible. We're not watching Dragonheart. If you follow us on Twitter, go on the Facebook forums, or even look at us on Earwolf, you would see that we announced it there. But for all of you who watch Dragonheart, I sincerely apologize, but we are not going to be talking about a talking dragon. Oh, no, we have something way better for you. It's a movie with many morals, but the most important being, if you did nothing wrong and you're in trouble, do not ask for help and do not tell any of your friends. We saw The Boy Next Door, so you know what that means. Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just being a hater, because we really wonder how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made? Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am your host, Paul Scheer. That was a brand new theme song by Vander Talens, who decided to go out and record her actual theme song with real musical instruments, not on a synth or anything like that. That is all real musicians.
The same people that did the original theme song, or is that a cover?
It's a cover with original instruments. So he went out, he got like
but
different
he's
people.
Not the person that made the original theme song.
No.
Okay, got
so,
it.
So yeah, it is a, so cover, it's a cover of the original theme song with real musicians. And that's Vander Talens who made that for us. Jason, welcome. You're my co-host. I didn't give you a proper introduction.
Yeah,
you started
fuck
talking.
You, man. You know what? Real dick move. First of all, you throw a real curveball at me with a song I've never heard. And then I get no intro. What is this show? Is falling
it's already off the
apart.
Rails.
Reddit, figure it out. This is where it all ended.
Sadly, today we are not joined by June. She is off shooting the third season of Grace and Frankie. So for the next couple of weeks, you might see her sporadically on the
deal
podcast.
With it.
Deal with it. You can go to Grace and Frankie set. You can boycott out there. That's where she'll be. Just get out
please
there
don't
with
do
signs.
That. Please don't do that.
We have two very special guests, two first-timers to the show. Please welcome. You know her from CW's Whose Line Is It Anyway? Heather Ann Campbell. Welcome.
Hi, everybody. Hi. How are you? What's
very
going on, guys?
Good. We're
hello,
so excited.
Heather.
Hi, guys. Hi. How are you?
And just to say, before we even start talking about this, I read an awesome article about Whose Line Is It Anyway the other day. It was awesome. About how the show is still like amazing after all these years.
Arguably. And here we are, like 20 years into, for me at least, improvising in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. Arguably, my first introduction was the British Whose Line Is It Anyway? Mm-hmm. And like the fact that that format continues to succeed and inspire kids to improvise is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So you have a hand in that.
Thank you, guys.
It's you.
I'll take full credit.
Like in the Time is a Flat Circle situation, like you inspired me to do this.
Wow.
now.
I'm not sure that that tracks.
Say
your,
you know what? Who cares?
Say thank you. Thank her,
thank
Jason.
You. Thank you, Heather.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Also, today we have a very special guest, Ben Seaman, who is, you might know him from CW's My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. He plays the grocery store guy with the half an eyelid. And you're coming back, so people can look forward to that.
I'm hoping so. I was in two episodes, season two. I'm pretty sure I'm a big character.
Yeah.
I've started to be recognized by, like, really aggressive people because it's like a cult show, so people are really passionate about it.
Oh, they feel a real ownership.
This is a very CW-friendly show. We have two of our guests are from CW
shows.
Oh,
that's true.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
wow.
Right. We're shaking
CW
hands right
CW representing.
Now.
Yep. This show is now sponsored by the CW.
And our third guest, Michigan J. Frog from the WB.
He won't talk when everyone's around, only when one person is by themselves,
he's
right?
He's actually
that's
got
right.
a mic right now, but he's not saying
he
anything.
He won't say a thing.
I had
and a
friends,
small cane and top hat just sitting in front of him.
I had friends who worked at the desks at WB when it was W before WB became CW, and they had to answer the phone and go, hello, welcome to the WB.
Oh,
like,
no.
You have to say it like
oh,
that.
No.
When, like, secretaries
that's
and stuff.
Worst.
Like, yeah, you have to say WB.
Oh, that's awful.
That should be its own podcast.
Just people who had to work the desks of the poor WB
I
talking
feel
about
like
homeboys
people,
in outer space.
Yeah, I feel like those people must have, like, PTSD from that job.
That is the worst.
You're forcing a stutter every time you answer the phone.
Like, what if you were someone who recovered from a stutter? You went through speech therapy, all of it as
so
a kid,
upsetting.
And now they're forcing you back into a
you
stutter.
You got your first Hollywood job working for a big-time executive.
And, you know, like, you're like, hey, hello, welcome to the WB. And it's like just, your mom calling, being like, oh, no, are you okay?
Or they instantly regress, and then they lose everything that they work towards, to speak like a regular person.
Well, I'm very excited to have you both here and Jason too, because this movie is kind of for me the perfect how did this get made movie because oof. it's so perfectly, wonderfully bonkers, enjoyably fun to watch.
Great.
And if Bad Judgment had a movie, this would be this movie because everyone in this movie shows incredible poor judgment at every single step of the way. And just so you don't know, if you don't know what this movie is about, J-Lo is...
Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, is kind of in a divorce with her husband. We don't really know. This is basically all you get to kind of understand the whole backstory is this ADR. We'll just play this ADR. Because this is literally the first thing you hear in the movie.
The movie begins with her just jogging and then flashbacks.
It's like...
She begins by having flashbacks.
It's the same opening as Silence of the Lambs.
Oh wow.
Yeah, she's running through the forest and you're like finding out how her life went.
Oh, wow.
Wow. This movie is a lot like Silence of the Lambs.
This is basically Silence of the Lambs too.
I will also point out when you do listen to the ADR, listen to how blasé John Corbett reads his lines.
Yeah.
I want to come home, Claire. Let me come home. Please.
Just get out. Get out.
Don't tell me Dad's not coming back. Don't tell me that.
Jogging,
Kevin,
jogging,
wait.
Jogging.
Kevin?
And that's basically that you're getting into this world, and they don't really tell you if they're divorced or if they're not really.
Well, in the first scene, they tell you when Chenoweth is like, just sign the divorce papers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been 9 months.
I wish that instead it had been like a political thriller and you'd seen all that in white text on black.
Yeah.
9 months ago, her husband cheated on her.
Yeah.
They still have not settled the divorce.
Yeah. This movie is just absolutely 100% like a Lifetime, like I feel like one of those Lifetime movies you know, someone where it's about a woman who someone turns on her and it is just like this movie is basically a Fatal Attraction in reverse.
Yes.
You know, but she is just relentlessly pursued by the boy next door in a way that is very crazy.
Oh, it goes so crazy so quickly.
I wrote it down. I was like, he's already a full psycho at like minute 25.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's such a fast turn. And even... I haven't seen Fatal Attraction in a while, but when they have sex, like, isn't it just, like, all great? Like, it's super sexy? Yeah. And in this, like, the sex, at least the first half of it, is very upsetting.
Yeah, like, the first, she says no, like,
so many times.
She says no a lot. I watched that as well. When no is not working, she's saying stop.
Yeah. I was really worried about that because that sends the completely wrong message, too, because, he just wears her down. And then and then she is really into it.
Yeah.
But that's not a good message to be shooting out to people. No. Like,
hey, let's not say shooting out. I mean, when we're describing this, let's not say shooting out to people.
I bet there's a correlation between, so this movie and 50 Shades of Grey both feature like psycho creepy alpha dudes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they both have a hardware store scene in the first act.
Oh, wow.
Whoa, that's a big connection.
And I feel like you could probably draw a diagram of like, if you have a hardware store scene, because it like
the guy is not gonna turn out good. He knows where he can get like special ties and things like that. Well, let's even walk it back for a second and just give you the idea that J-Lo is now separated from her husband. Her best friend's Kristen Chenoweth. She's got this son who is in line to see the best allergist in the county.
This part of the movie really resonated with me. As somebody who has very severe allergies and who carries an EpiPen wherever I go, this movie was really scary.
Well, they also set up something in the beginning that I thought was going to come into play so much, which is the garage door.
Yes.
It's like they're like, oh, the garage door's not working, and it's this like tricky situation where it's like, oh, you have to pull this handle and it's going to go down. And I'm like, oh, clearly someone's head is going to
I definitely thought that's how he would die or someone would die.
Oh, interesting.
It was just a setup to show his bicep.
Well, it was also an opportunity for him to ingratiate himself with the family by fixing it.
Sure. Right,
you know, he comes in and he fixes the garage
door. But you also thought like, well, if they spend that much time, wouldn't it eventually, you know, like he'd fall down or break?
They never even go to the garage.
It would have been amazing if when she was going through, and this is a spoiler, when she was going through his files later, she also found like broken garage door.
Well, I love that he looks at that garage door and he goes, that's the clutch.
Yeah.
I don't even know if the garage door has a clutch. And then I go,
I had to Google it because I was like, do they have clutches? Because nobody, and I guess they do. So I was really disappointed. I was really disappointed. But I feel like it was so specific.
And the writer of this movie, the only two people that have Googled that.
Oh, the writer. Did you guys see? The writer is a like a criminal lawyer or something, right?
Oh, really?
Yes. Wow. She is a she holds a JD from Northwestern University School of Law and an MFA in screenwriting from UCLA. She was an assistant U.S. attorney in downtown L.A. for nearly a decade, working in the major violent crimes unit on federal cases that included murder for hire, prison murder, racketeering, arson, kidnapping, and bank robbery. And she taught criminal procedure at FBI headquarters in Quantico and advanced trial advocacy in the U.S. Justice Department in D.C.
All of that sounds so much more interesting than what's in this movie.
Which she also wrote on IMDb. Like, she wrote her own bio.
Oh, really?
She should have written any of that into a movie. I feel like it was really specific that they wanted you to know that he knows about clutches. Like, it wasn't he's good at, like, fixing everything. It was like, it's the clutch in the garage, the clutch in the cars. Like, it's only clutches that he knows about.
Well, he's like, he is like that kind of, you know, he's the kid who moves in next door, but they also make great effort to be like, but he's 19.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's 20.
Oh, he's 20. Sorry.
That's too, like,
But he's in high school.
That made me – that actually took away the entire dramatic thrust of the movie, if you ask me. Because, like – yeah, go ahead.
Do you think that was a rewrite thing? Do you think that was like a
– I feel like it had to be because –
I feel like they couldn't make him an actual 18? Kid.
Yeah.
Sure.
In high school because that would seem – that would be – that would almost – like, in this way, she's allowed to have the fantasy of sleeping with him without there being like, well, that's a child.
Yeah.
He's a 20-year-old.
Maybe it was written a little bit more morally gray. Like, originally, before it was so black and white, maybe it was about, like, how these kids are I don't know.
Because even if he's 18, you can at least buy it on some level because he's 20. Yeah. She could have met him, you know, out anywhere. You know, it's like, it just felt weird because it's like,
that's the other thing is I agree with you. It lets the steam out a little because she like fucks this 20-year-old kid or this 20-year-old man, and then it has like such a an inability to like go to anybody for help because I think she's afraid she'll lose everything.
Right,
she'll lose her family, she'll lose her son.
That's what she says.
But
says,
like,
I'll lose.
I can't but imagine that's the case. He's not underage.
He's not even her student when they have sex.
Yeah, no,
yeah. Like, that's the other thing. Like, just back it up. Put him in the class.
Yep.
Before, like, just put some stakes to it. There are no stakes.
Yeah. Yep.
To
agree.
It at all.
If he was 18. It would have been way more exciting. And they don't even really. It's just like a way more exciting.
Whoa.
It's just like a throw a line way of like, I think he doesn't even explain why. He's just like, yeah, something happened. So now I'm 20 or something like that.
There
like,
was an accident.
There was a thing. Like,
so basically, I missed 3 years of school. Now I'm here.
And also, like in high school, a 20-year-old is like a full blown adult. Like, you're terrifying.
I would argue a 20-year-old would not be allowed in high school.
No.
They would have to get their GED.
Yeah,
I think you know what I mean. Right. Like, why is this happening?
And he approaches high school like college. Like, he's wearing like a tie going in. Like
he's entering like quoting poetry, like performing for the class.
And by the way, this 20-year-old has sex with a girl that's probably underage at another point
that's
in the movie
true.
Too.
Yeah. Oh, so Hardware Girl,
which I really want to get into Hardware Girl because we did talk about the hardware stuff. First of all, my favorite thing in the hardware store was when they go to get the clutch, they go over to the the garage door display. Like they're just like the worst set design of all time. Just like, oh yeah, these were all your garage door parts are. I've been to many a hardware store. I've never seen a garage door like display. Like, oh yeah, these are where I get all my parts.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, we got that. They have the best garage door section.
So the hottest girl in the school is working at the hardware store, and J Lo's kid, the Wiz, who has allergies.
The Wiz.
There's so many stuff I want to talk about. But
so much.
This girl is like, he's like, oh, I can't talk to her. And he's like, just the hot guy's like, go talk to her. And then he kind of makes eyes at the girl. And then she's like,
wait,
the young guy.
The kid. The
Noah.
Wiz.
Yeah. No,
oh, no,
Noah.
No, the boy next door.
No, the boy next door makes eyes at the girl. And then she's all of a sudden nice to the Wiz.
Yeah.
Which well, I didn't understand. Like, is that a thing that.
That happens throughout. Throughout. Like, that's when the Wiz. Later, the second hardware store scene, and the Wiz is like, I want you to go to the movies with me. And she's like, I'm busy at work. And then Noah arrives, the boy next door arrives, and she's like, but I'll go to the fall fling with you. And I was like, whoa, you just upped the ante.
Also, when they have sex later, it's like pornography. It's like pornography.
Oh, when hardware store girl and the boy next door have sex? Yes, it is dirty.
Well, it's like the sex
is pretty boring.
Oh, I thought that the sex for J-Lo was pretty, like, I was surprised for J-Lo. I guess I'm surprised.
You're surprised for J-Lo because she can't pull that kind of action down?
Well, you know what it is? It's like, I think I'm surprised to see fingering in a mainstream movie.
Yeah. Oh,
besides
well, see, to me,
fear,
sure.
Like, besides, like, I feel like, oh, she's a big actress. Like, we're going to finger this person? Like, I
felt like all the sex in this movie, the J-Lo boy next door sex, was interesting because it had as a function of it all of this, like, in a way that was so interesting and is not ever normally seen in a mainstream movie, all of the pleasure of the sexual encounter was him towards her.
Yeah.
Right. She is saying no, 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 stop, stop, stop for a lot of it. But even when she gives into it, he is just fingering her and feasting on her pussy constantly.
Yeah.
And that's all, it's as if all he wants is to give her pleasure. And that's
really
like
interesting.
That I feel like never happens in a movie. And that's like that's why to me this felt like a very kind of like interesting, weird, like again, reversal of Fatal Attraction, which is like, it really is like, he is so into her, and that is so winning. I feel like not winning, but like that is so compelling to her in those early scenes that the turn is just so bananas. Because all he's basically doing is just worshiping her.
Yeah, he loves her. And they should have, I think, again.
He says, let me love you, right? During that, he's like, he gives like 20 red flags just in that sexual encounter.
Yeah, he really is. There's a lot of wrong things, but, I feel like in that sex scene, though, it is, she obviously, I think, you know, she falls prey to him, right? Like, he seduces her, mm-hmm. I guess. But, like, go ahead.
One of the ways in which he seduces her is by buying her a first edition
Iliad. I mean, can we?
First edition.
All right, so just like, we, I mean,
that's a big
down,
thing that definitely has to be talked
it,
about.
It would be over 3,000 years old, and it would most likely be on a scroll. Yeah. Like, that would be how the first edition would be.
I mean, unless it's like, oh, it's the first edition of
a
like,
translation.
The such and such as translation. And
but something. She just, like, this is a first.
Oh my God, she's basically like, oh, this is the original Iliad?
Yeah.
And that's one of those things where I just can't imagine that all those people on set and the writing and all the processes that nobody brought that up at any time.
Yeah, it's not like a John Grisham book. It's like this book, this is an old, old man.
Nobody did ever clarify where his money, was his money coming from the death of his parents?
Did he even have money? I don't even know.
He had a huge truck and he bought the first Iliad for a dollar.
For a dollar at a yard sale or whatever.
But it's like, it doesn't seem to even, they don't really explore a lot of anything. Like, he's now here. I guess maybe he got his parents' money from when
His truck is like a
new truck.
$100,000 truck.
And did he kill his mother?
No. Yeah. His mother killed herself.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so this is what we find out at the end of the movie. Yes. Is that he's basically an orphan because he has, and that's the whole thrust of a lot of the movie, is he has a real vendetta against against cheating dads, cheating lying dads. His mother killed herself because she found out that dad was cheating on her.
Got it.
And then he killed his dad and his cheating whore.
Well, I got that part because that was a great way to show that he was with a real whore. Because she, like, they're driving like in a minivan or whatever, and she like lifts up her skirt and he's like touching her thigh.
But like, what's interesting is it shows us this scene which none of our characters are present for.
No, it's the only flashback with like nobody involved.
Nobody's perspective.
The only flashbacks are at the beginning, which you can kind of understand, but then this flashback, which is completely unnecessary. It's strange.
You cannot have a flashback to a scene in which none of the characters in the movie are present. You know, like that flashback is basically his imagining of what might, or her imagining of what might have, like none of it is can actually be real.
Right.
Well, to me also.
Unless the truck driver is somebody we've met. I don't know.
I also had issues with that whole, like when J-Lo goes in full on investigation mode.
So weird. So shades of blue all of a sudden, she's like a detective.
The San Bernardino Police Department is like, oh, you want to see like a burned out husk of an accident truck and all this stuff?
Oh, from years
ago. Give you full access.
Yeah, and we keep them on file. We keep all of our accident cars ready. Which one do you want to see? Oh, this one,
I'm a detective. I'll bring you, a public school teacher, down to check out the burned out wreckage of a car accident.
That happened years ago, right?
Years ago.
Has no signs of foul play, so they would never have a burned out husk. They would have just compacted it or gotten rid of it in some way.
Did you think it was weird that, like, when she was looking at the files of the cars that were cut, like, the one car had the brand name of the car, and then the other file was 2006 minivan.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if it was because, like, Chevrolet was like, we don't sell minivans, or we don't want other brands mentioned, maybe?
Well, maybe. Yeah.
Weren't all the cars, like, extremely glossy, fancy versions of cars?
His truck, when you really see that truck, especially when it does that U-turn towards the end, it's like, it's a big-ass truck. Yeah. It's like a fancy.
Or the scene where, like, where he's, like, revving his engine in front of her house while they're trying to go to school in the morning. And he's like, and her son is like, what's going on? And I was like, good question, Kevin. Like, shit's not right. You need to ask way more questions.
And then he gets in the car with him, 20 seconds later.
Oh, yeah, well, he's got Kevin wrapped around his finger. I wouldn't be surprised if he was having sex with Kevin, too. I mean,
I thought that was so strange. I felt like at the beginning when you first meet the boy next door that the son is like wants to have sex with Noah more than the mom.
That would have been a movie. That would have been an amazing movie.
With everybody.
Yeah.
Because he is instantly 100% smitten with him. He already has a father, so he's not looking for a father figure, but he wants to hang out with him.
He's like, he means that brother.
They're supposed to go to the allergy doctor, and then there's this garage problem, and then they just don't go to the doctor.
And by the way, why doesn't he want to go to the allergy doctor? He is on the verge of dying at every step of the way. Like, hey, buddy. Like, let's see if we can get this fixed. Because you said it was bees, but then later on you get allergic to punching a bag. So I don't know.
It's like, what this really bothered me.
Is it asthma? Bothered
me. Because they say he had an allergic reaction to a bee sting, which, very serious.
Normal.
I want everybody to take that very seriously. But then he basically has an asthma attack, which you would not presume would put him into anaphylactic shock.
He got stung by a bee while boxing.
Maybe.
I mean,
maybe he was floating like a butterfly, stung. Like a bee. Guys, all right, all R.I.P. Muhammad Ali. This episode of How Did This Get Made dedicated to the champ, Muhammad Ali.
Always.
They didn't do anything to explain why he had that reaction at punching the bag. They could have just thrown a line in there of like, oh, the dust or something like that.
Or have him get stung by a fucking bee.
Have a bee in
there.
Why
not? You introduce the bee. You just basically need to remind the audience, oh, yeah, he has an EpiPen on him because that plays an amazing part towards the end, which we'll get to. But also when he does pull out that EpiPen, that was a great scene, too, where the boy next door is like, where do I put this? Like, he's like, he's like Pulp Fiction for a second.
He was going to shoot it in his heart at one point.
Yeah, and also, it's genuine heroism in that moment. Like,
yes.
For one moment, the kid is like a great guy.
It was such a weird choice. I didn't know if they were supposed to give us that so that J-Lo would, like, carry him on a little bit longer, wouldn't immediately call the cop.
It was just for a sentence where he's like, you could have thanked me for saving your son's life.
Yeah.
And like, that was the only callback to that.
It seems to me, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but if J-Lo would have just continued the relationship, this guy would have been like one of the best guys he would ever have, right?
He would have loved her completely forever.
And he's putting down his bone marrow transplant needing uncle, we never found out if it really took. I mean, obviously he's in the house, but we don't know.
He was very sweet to his uncle as well.
To his uncle? Didn't correct Kristen Chenoweth when she pronounced guacamole as guacamole.
And who else? I mean, like, who else would you want to date if you're J-Lo? Except for, like, a kid, a young, good-looking guy who's, like, handy around the house, takes care of his elders, and all he wants to do is eat your pussy.
Just pleasure her.
Immediately.
But he's interesting, like, that when he has sex with another woman, he just wants them to go down.
Oh, yeah.
Because
he doesn't give a shit about Hardware Girl. He loves J-Lo, and
he's
like,
consummate
I'm
going to
crawl in that puss.
Yeah, if there was anything to let us know why he liked J-Lo so much, or if he just fixates on somebody once he
and
fixates.
And that sex scene.
Justice was why he fixated on her.
That sex scene, also, I do want to say, she only close-mouth kisses him.
Oh, yeah.
She never gives him an open-mouth kiss.
His tongue is out a lot.
He's got like a real tongue situation everywhere.
We pulled some clips. Nate pulled some clips from the commentary track. I have not audio, but I want to read what the director says during the sex scene. And these are some of it. And he goes for it because he loves her. And everything he does to her in this scene is out of worship and love for her being. And he goes, and he really starts triggering her sexual responses. And look at that body on Jennifer. At age 44, I mean, she's absolutely remarkable. She's got the body of a 20-year-old, and she's a mother of twins. She's on the road performing American Idol. She's always busy. She's one of the hardest working professional women I've ever met, and she's still got time to hit the gym. So you know I like that.
Gross.
He takes something where it's like a very rare sex scene where it's all about the woman being pleasured, and then commentary turns it into the grossest douchey statement.
And then he says, this is my other one. He goes, with the understanding that we really went at it to create an intense erotic experience that she's hungry for, that she's adoring, swept away by his male power and sexuality merging with her mature female sexuality, and he seems to know just what to do, and that's erotic in and of itself.
He also adds, I was the physical stand-in for a lot of these scenes, you know, because, you know, sometimes the actor wasn't available. So I'm the one, you know, like James Cameron in Titanic drawing, I'm the one going down on her in like five of them.
I was the fingers in the fingering scene. I didn't want him to do it. I did wonder if there was, I mean, not to go back to the fingering, but I did wonder if there was a fingering Dumble because like.
Dumbledore? Dumbledore in this movie?
He is.
Oh, boy.
He created a spell. Oh. He put him under the spell.
What?
Yeah, he put him under the J-Lo spell.
Oh, but like, wow.
I am always fascinated by sex scenes.
Albus like, Dumbledore what? Sex scene.
It's hot.
Yeah.
It's in the new play.
Hey, guys,
play.
before we're going to block this scene before
secrets,
we shoot
right?
it. So, J-Lo, you don't have to be in this. Dumbledore, you're in.
Great. I'll get my wand ready.
I was taking notes during some of the movie, and I didn't. Did they explain why she had stripper heels?
Oh, yes. Because
they did? Okay.
Kristen Chenoweth gave them to her.
They went on a double date, or she was going to go on a double date.
Right? Oh, right.
Did go on that weird,
so she wore those heels to that date?
Yes.
Was she wearing them?
Yes, because when she was walking in vacant Chinatown.
What movie was that?
No extras.
Nobody there.
Zero.
Nobody there. It was so creepy.
There was easily seven people at the Fall Fling.
Oh, the Fall Fling was equal. Yeah, like I felt like they were
empty.
Like, Empty
Chinatown streets. You know what neighborhood is constantly full of people at dinner time at night? Chinatown.
There wasn't one extra.
It was zero. Early. It was like an early dinner. It wasn't like late night Chinatown.
No.
It was prime time. Like, the only thing I could think of was like J-Lo's like, I don't want extras in this scene. And
Maybe. They're
like, okay, then we won't have anyone. won't even have a sign of life on this street.
It was very odd looking.
She's walking down Main Street Chinatown and wherever they're living.
Empty. Los Angeles.
And that date, yeah.
Was it Los Angeles?
Yeah, San Bernardino, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wanted us to really, like, have a contrast of this. That date was terrible, comically.
Holy cow.
That guy was a monster. Like, they definitely wanted us to hate him with every fiber of our
being. And also for us to recognize that in comparison, TBND, the boy next door, was much, much like more attentive, more thoughtful, more smarter, more intelligent, more, you know, every bit of what that guy isn't is embodied in the boy next door.
I really did love when she dropped the mic basically by going, J.K. Rowling. Billionaire, classics major.
Yeah.
And like turned on those stripper heels.
And by the way, they're in fucking high school. So who cares? Like you don't go like, oh, I'm in high school to get out and make money. It's like, if she was again, this is where the logic of the movie is flawed. It's like, she's teaching a high school English class. Like, she's not like, it's not the major. I mean,
she's not like a professor.
How did she afford that giant house?
I'm assuming that's Corbett
school
bucks.
Corbett dollars.
Corbett on the weekend is building computers for
Corbett.
His son.
Building computers, who has like some sort of job where he has to go to San Francisco where he fucks his secretary.
Yep.
Because we all know San Francisco is like sex city.
I thought they were going to tie the girl that he cheated on with that kid. Like, because they're
with
both
Noah?
Up north. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But maybe that, you know.
I had like 1 minute for some reason I thought that Kristen Chenoweth and John Corbett?
Yeah.
They were having the affair.
Corvette.
John Corvette. For a second, I thought they were having an affair because there was that thing of like, she smelled like cookies. And then,
And then later in the movie, J-Lo smells a chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah.
And J-Lo's always making cookies.
That's weird.
Did she smell it because Noah had taken a bite out?
No, she smelled it because Kristen Chenoweth, in the scene earlier in the movie, tells her that Corbett said to the woman he was cheating with that you smell like chocolate chip cookies. The woman, the girl.
And then also the...
And so she smelled the cookies to be like, what is this? What did the girl that my husband cheated on smell like?
And boy next door says to her in front of the dinner table, I really like your cookies.
Oh, yeah.
We should play that scene, the wet cookie scene, because this is like a great double entendre scene. So basically the boy next door comes over to kind of just kind of stake his claim a little bit. Here we go. And this is I want to talk about this scene, but here we go.
Hey, Mrs. Peterson.
Hey, Noah.
Oh, looks perfect. You tell him what happened this weekend?
What happened?
Oh, there was a big thunderstorm up here. You guys didn't get it up there?
No, beautiful. Dry as a bone at the lake.
Well, it got pretty wet here.
Double entendre.
It got pretty wet here.
Big day tomorrow, first day of school. It's getting kind of late.
It's like 8:30.
Oh, no. Actually, I gotta get going. It's big day tomorrow.
Do you want to take a cookie for the road?
Love your mother's cookies.
Shit.
Yeah. So now this scene...
Right after they had sex.
Well, but I'm very confused about this because she's hosting the dad and son. They've just come back from a camping trip, which she opted not to go on, but she's so freaked out in the kitchen. She's like, and she's dropping the pie. But he's not even there, Noah, at that point. And she's so like...
Maybe she was hungover?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. Like, I would at least buy that because there was no reason for her to be that nervous in her own home to be like, they're going to find out. They're going to find out. Like, but there's no reason. He's not there.
She can't handle it.
Well, maybe that's
She is like, I feel like undone.
Yeah, that was her first orgasm.
Yeah. She like when she wakes up in the morning and because here's the thing. When she goes, we've talked about the sex scene, but the lead up to the sex scene is she's gone on the terrible double date. She's at home. Noah calls her. And she goes over to help him with a chicken.
And she's a little drunk.
Yeah.
Is she, though?
She had like pounding wine on the couch.
I guess that's true. Because I was like, when she gets up in the morning, I was like, you're not drunk enough to be like, oh, no, what happened?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
she remembers.
She remembers everything.
She blasted this kid 4 hours.
And his hands never left her breast.
And then never. As an adult woman, did not walk next door to her own house, slept on his bed with him, I assume, and then
on his couch.
On the couch. And then woke up as if to say, like, what has happened?
I agree, yeah. She woke up so flustered, like, what happened?
Yeah, like
I made
you
a giant
drugged
mistake.
Me or something. Yeah.
Does the uncle live with them?
He's in the hospital for his bone marrow transplant. Or as he says, transport.
She's like, we made a big mistake. We can't do this. And then he immediately punches the wall in a very angry way to let us know that he's crazy.
Yeah.
And then she's like, all right, well, you know what? Now that you just punched that wall, let me sit down with you. Again, just another bad mistake. Like, let me bandage your hand, you psycho. I'm not going to go next door.
We do get a lot of the boy next door, just because this has come up on the show before, we do get a lot of the boy next door's buns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We get buns in the mirror.
Where do you guys, we've had an ongoing debate about buns.
Okay.
Sure.
And it's all personal. Do you like buns? Do you not like to see buns?
Is buns the for men in movies the boobs that is for women? Is it the body part that is like ooh la la? I can't believe I'm seeing these buns.
I think every time you see buns, it's such a choice that it's always just takes you out of the movie. Like it's never like
interesting.
It's never somebody walking by the camera and like oh you just see a butt
random
right.
buns
right. It's always. Like a glory shot of butt.
And that one was, I also find thin buns to be upsetting.
Oh, you're upset by thin buns?
Because I felt like he's too thin to show off his buns.
Oh, so you like some beefy buns?
I would like some beefy buns. I like a more muscular bun.
That, like the Jean-Claude Van Damme buns.
Yes.
I thought they were nice buns. I enjoyed them. I liked them. And you first see them when they're having sex, right? You don't see that was
no.
The big
you see
thing
him in the window.
When you see him in the window,
staring at himself,
staring
completely
himself.
Naked in the mirror, just
like
standing.
American Psycho. just like
this might as well have been
his own body.
Titled "The Young Patrick Bateman."
It really should be. Yeah. Like that's where he goes off, to where he gets out of the bar.
But it's that thing of like she's like ogling him through the window. It really, I do appreciate the reversal of all of the traditional. Yeah. Gender dynamics that are going on throughout all of this because it is very enjoyable in that way. And but his, like the way that he is objectified is fascinating. You know, like they are, every single person wants to fuck him.
I mean, and I thought this was an interesting choice too. Like she really takes in his abs in that sex scene too.
He grabs her hands and like, he's like, feel my abs.
Yeah.
That is so weird.
Oh yeah. Like, as if she is suddenly been struck blind. And he's like, I want you to know I have abs, so touch them. Read the braille that is my eight pack.
One of the things I loved about this movie, too, was that a lot of the movie was built on the tail end of jokes. I always felt like that we were coming in at the tail end of a joke or like people like,
oh, yeah.
I wrote down that her fake laugh is so insane throughout. Like people, I feel like she decided like my character is light and bubbly. So she laughs at stuff. Like she's laughing constantly for no reason.
Well, you hear these things like, and then I got closer and the window went down. The dead dog's still in the car. And we're like,
yeah, that's like how you begin a bad sketch, like a date and people are laughing and telling the end tale of a joke. Yeah. There were some weird jokes.
A lot of just walking and didn't you wish you were with us for this moment?
I enjoyed the buns. I don't know to speak for all gay men, but I feel like I'm more attracted personally to like the chest and the abs and buns. I guess there's lots of gay men that probably like buns because that's where they have sex, right? But for women, it seems interesting. I don't know if women are as attracted to buns, but you have talked about this with June.
I think it's becoming
June on record doesn't like buns.
No, she's against buns, but I feel like it's a personal choice, and I feel like it's interesting to see where people come from on the buns.
I wish that maybe he had also turned around, and then like you saw a reaction shot, like he has a giant dick.
Yeah,
sure. Like, he did turn. Into the window, and it's like it felt like it was close. Like they could have gotten his dick in this movie.
Maybe they did, and they had to cut it for rating.
Yeah.
I would not have been surprised, you know, if we had seen his dick. Because
and if it was
arguably,
this hard, if it was this all
just
hard,
a rock hard
just turn around from the
that
mirror,
would have been amazing. How shocking would that have been in a movie?
He just points
just like,
at
whoa!
It and then points out the window at her.
That would
like
have been amazing,
like Babe Ruth,
and then like her tongue drops out and her eyes bug out.
and you just hear like as if her water broke. You just hear like a. a splash.
Oh, that would be so upsetting. And then Kristen Chenoweth walks in and it's like,
slips in the puddle.
Yeah, she falls down.
Oh. And then it's just a very slapstick sex scene.
Kristen Chenoweth in her Susie Orman haircut that she has.
Kristen Chenoweth has made a good career of being people's best friends in a lot of movies and always giving bad advice. And I feel like she, I feel like there's a part of me always, and I think when we all do stuff, we all act in things. When you look at certain things like, oh, someone's going to have to say this to my face. And I feel like she must have had a gulp moment when he gets abrasive with her and he calls her dried up, dirty fucking cunt.
He was throughout the movie added fuckings. Like the he says at the end, oh, I wrote it down because it was so, die, you piece of fucking shit.
It's amazing.
Like he adds fucking when it
and it sounds more like intense with the fucking. It does. It's too scary.
Those were his acting choices to like take it to the next level. Yeah. He's like, I took a 101 class. I'm going to improvise. I'm going to add some stakes.
For the simple action. The singular action that the boy next door takes to beat up Kevin, the J-Lo's son's bully.
Yes.
So J-Lo's son is also being bullied by like some skateboard thugs.
Deservedly so.
Yes. Right?
So the kids are making fun of Kevin. They're taunting him. They call him Wiz because he pissed his pants and blah, blah, blah.
And I just want to bring up one thing too. And when one point they go, hey man, I saw your movie on TMT or TMC. He goes, the Wiz. It's the Black Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, like, no, they have to explain it.
That's not a thing that we need to get in deep. Like, we got it. Like,
that was definitely a note where someone's like, I don't know if people know what the Wiz is. We better.
Young people probably don't know the Wiz.
The Black Wizard of Oz is such a weird specific. Hey, everybody. We have to take a brief break in the show to give thanks to our sponsors and give thanks to our good friend, Gabe Callahan. Let me tell you about Gabe Callahan, all right? He's somebody who is not going to let you down. How do I know? Because he gave us $400. This feels like bribe money, Gabe. Okay, we're going to take this money, but I do not want to be indentured servitude to you for the rest of my life because it feels like too much money, Gabe. But Gabe, thank you. And with all big name donors, what I'm going to do right now is sing you a song and call it the Gabe song. Gabe Callahan is the man. He killed a unicorn with his bare hands. Gabe Callahan, the man. Just remix that and it'll be a great club hit. Hey, everybody. Do you know about Blue Apron? Blue Apron is the best, right? Their mission is simple. Home cooking accessible to everyone. And I love Blue Apron because essentially a box comes to my house. I open up the box. Everything is doled out in the right ingredients. I have a nice little pamphlet to tell me what to cook. And then I'm cooking and it brings the joy of cooking back. I love to cook, but I don't like to figure out what I'm going to make. I want to expand my horizons, which Blue Apron does because they give you these amazing meals. Things that are so delicious like spicy Korean rice cakes with snow peas and pea shoots, sweet chili ponzu catfish, and green beans with coconut ginger rice. The options are limitless, all right? The beef is raised humanely, the chickens are free range, the pork is ranged naturally, and regenerative farming practices are used for the produce. Plus, Blue Apron can be delivered to 99% of the continental United States. Here's what I love about Blue Apron, all right? You get to cook together with the people that you love, you make a meal, you feel better about yourself, you didn't order in for once, okay? And you're experimenting. You're trying things. People start to like you more because you are a cooker now. That's right. You're a cooker. So here's the thing, okay? Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their community of artisanal suppliers, family-run farms, fisheries, and ranchers. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron is bringing you the best. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Now, what do I want you to do? I want you to check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/bonkers. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/bonkers. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
So the boy next door comes in and fractures the kid, beats the kid almost to death. And the only person to take any disciplinary action over him is Chenoweth, a vice principal. Like, the police are not called?
No.
He put this kid in, Noah, the boy next door, would be put into jail. So quickly for assault.
100%.
It is crazy that the police don't show up. There is they are bad administrators. It's a bad school.
And he doubles down on her. She's like, hey, you shouldn't have done that. And he's like, fuck you! Yeah.
That's the scene where he calls her a dried up, withered old cunt.
How did he get keys to the school? Like, because that's another thing.
He's the boy next door. He can do anything.
He's Googling breaks online. He can figure out
hacking computers. He can do anything.
And look, he's clearly got some amazing technology from those little spy cams to get amazing high-res sex images. Like, that was...
So much forethought goes into, I'm going to put cameras in my alarm clock in case I fuck the woman next door.
Yes, in case.
And I need to get her into the living room because that's really the only, I need to fuck her on the couch because that's the only way this will work. And I'm only doing that so I can blackmail her or I guess maybe jerk off to
it. Terrifying basement.
And that was weird too.
Because the uncle came back, I think.
But wait, he has to sleep in the basement when his uncle's back?
I don't know.
Like, you know, that bed. Was his, like, sex dungeon.
Oh, so he just, like, jerks it there.
He just jerks off in that room.
That's just his jerk-off room because he fucks Hardware Girl.
It
was also a real bummer. I was like, oh, the poor Hardware Girl, because she's the person who is arguably the most naked in the movie.
Yes.
You see her whole naked body.
Yeah.
You know, just like totally. And I was like, whoa, this is presumably a 16 or 17-year-old girl in the logic of the movie.
Yeah. This is
very strange. Also, we're not seeing J-Lo. We're seeing his buns and chest, but like, this girl is straight up nude.
If there's one thing I know about the awkward sexual situations you find yourself in high school, it's that before you give a blowjob...
Wait, are you in high school, Heather?
Strip completely naked across the room and walk slowly up to your partner.
It was very Eyes Wide Shut kind of thing. Yeah. It wasn't a normal sex scene.
And it's also like, what was the deal they made? Hey, why don't you date my nerdy little friend and you can blow me?
Yeah.
cool. Yeah, man.
Yeah, that goes back to what you were saying about, like, she only agreed to do stuff with him because, you know, Noah would come in and give her a sexy look. And what was her thought? Like, I'll date this guy so that I can fuck him later?
If I get in good with this one, I can fuck him because that's how it works.
At the hardware store that also says skateboards and car parts and, like, everything.
It's everything.
They didn't want to have another location.
It's the only store in town.
And nobody's ever there.
Also empty.
I felt like it had that big skateboard display just so when the skateboard kids come in, then you would be like, why are they in a hard store.
Oh,
they also sell skateboards.
sell produce.
I want to just talk briefly before we get to the end of it. Talk about the when she goes to let in her class. The class is anxiously waiting outside her door, and the class is like lined with their sex pictures, which. That's like one of the most comical scenes I've ever seen in film.
Oh, and it's so funny. Because the printer is still printing them.
Yeah.
Oh, the printer is still shooting out the images from the video.
Shooting them onto the floor.
The floor is full of pictures. They're streamed around like it's a quinceañera. Like,
and there's a great quote from literature written up on as a threat.
She's like quickly shoveling them away. Like doctor, like the principal's like,
yeah.
Hey, let me in.
Yeah.
Let me in. Like
why is he and she so angry?
Was so angry that the class is starting 5 minutes late.
By the way, it would have taken her conservatively 35 to 50 minutes to have cleaned all of those up.
Forever.
And she cleans them up in 1 minute.
And all under her desk.
Yes. All under her desk. And when I was watching the movie, I gave it more credit than I should have. I was like, there's no way they're going to be gone. Like, the principal's going to come in.
Also,
and they're gonna have
it's
to
a
talk
beautiful day.
Yeah.
Why don't we just sit in the yard and do our lesson in the quad?
I love there's this very low angle Wachowski-esque shot of the key going into the door in slow motion. Yeah. It's totally unnecessary.
Which is unnecessary because the principal does not open the door.
No.
He doesn't unlock and open it.
Right.
She opens it from the inside out.
And she's like, oh, I was on a call.
Yeah.
And she has those hundreds of sheets of paper that she stuffed under her desk, and then she goes out to talk to him for a long time, and I just can't imagine those piles of paper are concealed behind the desk.
Yeah, they would fall. I think,
she's going to teach the whole class with this giant, like, mound of garbage.
Like, that is, like, that scene is a complete, like, that is, every step of the way when J-Lo is confronted with the actions that she has committed and the repercussions that he is threatening her with, She makes every wrong choice.
Oh.
She always makes it worse for herself.
It's a movie where you make a mistake and then she continues to make mistake, and then you're like, well, now I don't even feel bad that you're the victim because you've just made too many mistakes.
What a great title for a movie would be Every Wrong Choice.
Yes. Yes.
That would be, I would go see that movie.
Yes. By the way, I would say 80% of the movies in our, How Did This Get Made canon
We skipped a scene that I really loved where the husband is back to have dinner or something and he spends the night and you keep cutting to Noah, who is furiously reading the Iliad while having flashbacks of fucking
weird
J-Lo.
Intense, and with hands on breasts, shadow boxing, and
then reading again. Like, nobody goes from boxing to reading to masturbating to reading to boxing.
And he's so angry because the John Corbett's car is parked outside and he assumes he's fucking J-Lo.
Oh, you know, there's a really funny piece of audio design that happened, and Avril found this for us. So just listen to this. This is like, he cuts the brakes on John Corbett's car while Noah's driving, or while the boy's driving, the Wiz. And if you just, this is what I think is interesting, like, the brakes are cut, so the car is losing control, but if you listen to it, it sounds like the car is revving up as if the foot is on the gas. So, like, and that's the instant, like, here, listen.
Kevin!
That is the sound of gas,
Yeah. It's like shifting up.
Hold on. Stop breaking. Hit the brakes.
Stop breaking.
Downshift.
So he...
Downshift.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Just revving car.
It's as if the kid is hitting the gas the whole time.
Well... Yeah. When there's no clutch, that's what happens, right?
Also, why when he gets overwhelmed while boxing, does he not have one of his, like, asthmatic panic attacks during... Like, how much... that would have added so many stakes.
Yep.
He was suddenly couldn't breathe while also not able to control a car.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
I would have liked that. I mean, you know.
They should have died.
Yeah.
That would have made this movie amazing.
Yeah.
If he successfully... or if he killed first John Corbett, it would have been amazing if this movie had upped the ante. And he does eventually kill, spoilers, Chenoweth.
Oh, when he kills Chenoweth, I was like, what?
What the fuck?
Because he like sliced her throat. It was like gory.
It was very brutal. And meanwhile,
he shoved her in a closet. So
she fell out of.
This is the first time, like, all of his other murders and everything are like kind of untraceable or blackmailish. This one, he's just like, fuck it.
I'm killing everybody and we're getting out of here.
Yeah.
He does not care.
And I wrote down his reason. I killed her in case she wasn't your friend.
What?
That's what he said. He goes, I killed her in case she wasn't your friend.
Oh, wow.
So, like, he's because she knew all the details.
Yeah.
But he's like, but I love that murderer. Like, well, in case, just as a safety precaution, I killed her. In case she wasn't your friend.
It's only now occurring to me that... Hardware Store Girl was in on it with Noah from the beginning, not the beginning, because she's the one that tells J-Lo to go to the boys' bathroom at the Fall Fling.
Oh!
where he is waiting with the, having written on the wall, I fucked Claire Peterson,
and is
the only boy using the boys' room?
There are no extras.
No extras at the Fall Fling. It's a dance, rather.
And why didn't that ever get, like, why didn't
that
the principal...
That never came back.
Yeah, the principal should have said, hey, you know, we've been noticing some weird stuff, like that gigantic piece of graffiti that said, I fucked Claire Peterson. We want to talk to you about that.
And like, also, like, the other teacher saw you manhandling, like, the best-looking 20-year-old boy who goes to this school. Like, I'm not dumb. I think something's up.
So, like, but that I fucked Claire Peterson... No one took care of that.
Huge,
like,
in spray paint.
Yeah, and everyone...
And really well done.
And at the dance. At the dance. So people had to have been going into the
bathroom. The five people that were at that dance would have all seen
her son.
Her son.
It's a teen dance.
If the Wiz had to take a Wiz, yeah.
Yeah. It's a teen dance. That's where everybody is going to, like, secretly drink booze.
And what was also the thing, like, it was just hair that was in the sink? Like, she pulled out...
No, it was paper towels.
Oh, okay. I thought he pulled out.
It was hair.
I thought it was, like, an extension or something. Like, it was like, I got this from you, too. All right, so the end...
What, how dare you suggest that J-Lo has extensions?
Look, you know, her character.
How dare you?
Her character.
I like the idea that a woman who looks like J-Lo would ever be named Claire.
Oh, well, that goes to my... I wrote this down in the beginning. It's like, this movie is people saying things that they would never say. Like, she says schmutz. And I was like... J-Lo is never saying the word schmutz. Like, she's not like, you got some schmutz. And then when they're talking about computers, like, yeah, it's Arctic cooled PC gaming computer. Yeah. Like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking. No one feels like they, even the bullies don't feel like they know what they're saying. Everyone's like, yeah, I'm saying it, but.
But we have to know that it's all authentic because it came from a real criminal justice lawyer.
Yeah. Exactly.
These are all things she's seen or heard in depositions. Yeah.
I do have her reason why she came up with it. She developed the concept for the script after running past her dream house. A bad boy her son went to school with resided in the house across the street. This gave her the concept of a neighborhood boy creating conflict and driving a wedge between a family. And the first drafts focused more on the 12-year-old boy and the mother trying to get her son out of the boy's clutches. So it was much more
12.
That.
12-year-old boy. Yeah. So she did slowly age them up. At one
and
point,
she said
there
she
must
was influenced by Mary Kay Letourneau.
There must have been a draft at some point where
he was younger.
There's a 12-year-old boy and maybe a 15-year-old kid that she fucks.
Yeah, I bet that's right.
Yeah.
If she fucked a 12-year-old boy, then you really lose sympathy.
There's that story right now. There was that story last week about the teacher who got pregnant by her 13-year-old student.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
And it's bananas. And they had sex every day, like on at under the bleachers. The story was absolutely crazy.
To me, I feel like, couldn't you argue that if she did have sex with like an 18-year-old or something, he's a senior in high school, and he was just a little bit younger. Yes, it was a mistake, and yes, she's a teacher, but he wasn't in her class yet.
Yeah,
like, but
people would not root for her.
Really, you don't think?
I think people would not. People would think. I feel like that's this movie made in the 80s.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's this movie made and like it's an 18-year-old Rob Lowe or like somebody, it's like that version of the movie exists like Class. Mm-hmm. You know, like the mom fucks the kid's friend from high school.
But it also has this like Tyler Perry-esque moral thing where it's like, hey, look, the husband fucked around on the wife and nothing happened to
him.
But
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, right, I feel like right now that wouldn't, like, you, everybody wants to be able to, like, be like, no, she should be able to, like, get hers.
Yes.
But not in a way that is morally reprehensible, like, that it could be perceived of as, like, hurting a child.
Right.
Right.
You know, and I think that's why they have to make him, like, they have to go through so many hoops to be like, no, he's 20, but he's still in high school. Like, it doesn't add up at all.
No, and I think that's why she had to say no to him so much, because she couldn't really be seen.
Yeah.
Like, what's the big deal if her defenses went down? She had some wine, they're eating chicken, and all of a sudden.
And then all of a sudden,
yeah,
he's eating chicken.
Did you?
Right? My man.
Boom. Pussy tastes like chicken. I'm here to say pussy tastes like chicken.
Did he kill the?
Also full of salmonella.
you need to get out of there, man.
What?
You need to
get out. I am single.
All right, let me talk to you all about our good friends at CISO. What is CISO? Oh, it's only your portal for getting the best in comedy. Wait, hear me out. It's an on-demand 24/7 streaming comedy anytime, anywhere service curated for the comedy connoisseur. If you're listening to podcasts, you're probably going to like CISO. Why? Because they have original series, quotable classics, next day late night, stand-up specials, and more for only $3.99 a month. That's no joke. $3.99 a month, no ads, countless hours of premium HD content, never before seen new originals, new comedy added every single week, stuff like Wyatt Cinek has his brand new show called Night Train. UCB has a weekly variety sketch show. There's a new animated series called The Cyanide and Happiness Show. Plus, they have old stuff, stuff that you love, like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. Ever heard of it? It's great. It's an amazing show. It's a British show that I think you'll love. The Mighty Boosh, it's all on there. Have you seen Nathan Barley? It's there, okay? Did you know that Josh Gad did this weird little show called Gigi? Well, it's on there. Sounds good? I think it does, all right? Why don't you go to CISO.com and start watching all the comedy you can stream for free. Go to CISO.com and stream for free today. No credit card required at all. CISO.com, it's where comedy lives. Do me a favor. Look at your feet. Right now, what is on your feet? Probably an old pair of ratty-ass shoes that you've been thinking that you need to replace, but you don't want to go to the store. You don't want to sit there and try on shoes. You don't want to wait in that line. You don't want to find out they don't have it in your size. Let's face it, getting shoes is the biggest pain in the ass, okay? Let me tell you how I'm going to make that better for you. Zappos.com. Okay, what's Zappos? Oh, they're a place that carries pretty much every brand of shoe you can think of. They have fast and free shipping, a 365-day return policy. That's one whole year to try on a style and return it if you don't like it. Plus, live chat so you can shop and ask questions at work without anyone knowing that you're actually just buying shoes. And that's what I'm talking about, 24/7 customer support to help you, all right? This is a legitimate live support. A real Zapponian will answer any and all of your clothing concerns and questions to shoot the shit with you if you want. I mean, they're there. They have to answer you. You want to talk Brooks running shoes? They'll talk. You want to reminisce about how good the office was? They'll talk to you, okay? They'll probably be more interested in talking to you about shoes, but Zappos cares about you. They want to save you time. They want to save you money, and they want to get these shoes delivered to you as quick as possible. I've bought New Balance. I've bought Nikes, all on Zappos because I know it's going to get there. Visit Zappos.com/bonkers to see how good shopping can actually be. Get your shoes. And guess what? You can even shop naked because you don't have to go to a real store. So visit Zappos.com/bonkers to see more of what I like on Zappos and start your shopping today.
Did he kill the uncle, or are we to believe the uncle was okay? Because I definitely, when she went in to delete the files, I definitely thought she's going to find the dead uncle.
Like, yeah.
No,
yeah.
Murdered he, in the basement.
He but finds her.
Yeah. He lets her out. Like, he's fine.
I don't think the uncle ever went home.
But then,
I don't think that he ever went home to the uncle after the uncle. Once the uncle got home, he's like, oh, you scared me. I think from there on in, that guy was.
Also, oh, yeah. Never she left the basement door open, didn't she?
Yeah.
So wouldn't the uncle.
He can't go down there in that wheelchair.
Well, I don't think. I think Noah, the boy next door, I think his plan is, I think he's like ready to leave now. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm out of here. Things have gone down. Like,
yeah,
But I also think he loves his uncle. I think there is a really weird kind of, he does love his uncle, yeah. And he does think he loves J-Lo.
He loves too much.
He loves too much.
That's his crime.
He's like Lenny in Of Mice and Men.
Yeah.
He just squeezes too hard.
Yeah, he wants them to run away together at the
squeezes
end, right?
Squeezes those boobies too
yeah.
hard?
Yeah.
That's right.
Boom. you guys just listening to the podcast are missing a lot of high fives between Heather and I.
So he's always
squeezing her boobs so that we don't see them.
Well, yeah, that's what
I mean, it's always just boob squeezing and pussy eating.
Squeezing.
finger blasting.
I did love.
But he's like finger blasting in a way that it's like the way that I feel like softcore movies are like, it's like delicate outside touching.
Very tender. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very loving.
And she went to that date wearing like real underwear.
Oh, yeah.
That weird
brown. She was like, if this
slit.
Goes well.
Yeah.
Well, J-Lo, though, there's no slacker. I pulled up a picture of just her in nightgown
with
this slit up the side. Like, she's not, you know, she's like.
She looks great.
She's going to look great all the time. She's not, you know.
And she's wearing a bra to bed every
night.
Wait
a minute. Yeah. Wait. So she's got to be thrusting her hip out sideways to get that to work
yes.
like that.
Oh, yeah, she's used
like,
to that.
She's like,
her butt
she
is like, oh, yeah. like shooting out.
It's such a weird slip, too, because it's very modest looking until you see the side. And then it's all about pleasure.
I want to talk about the end of the movie really quickly, and then we can get into these second opinions, but the end of the movie I think has the best kill, two of the best kills back to back, which is the EpiPen comes back into play, and I literally could not watch.
Oh.
She fucking stabs him in the eye with that EpiPen.
Yeah.
And it was so, I don't know what.
And then he pulls it out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then he's got this fucking eye that's like, oh, that was a great, like, I mean.
Yeah.
In the world of
shocking, shocking.
And I felt like they wrote the EpiPen first, and then they reverse engineered the son and everything that went on with him to like justify this EpiPen.
How can we stab this guy in the eye?
Not to mention the fact that what you would be doing in that moment is giving him an overwhelming dose of adrenaline in the eyeball.
I thought that he was going to be like stronger, like Hulk out. Yeah.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Like Super Shredder.
Yeah.
Exactly, like Super Shredder.
But then, in very comical fashion, he walks 2 feet, she hits a button, and a fucking engine falls from the ceiling and hits him on the head.
I watched the beginning of it for a second this morning to be like, and they show that engine thing hanging down, but there's no setup for that engine thing. Like, there's never anything to make you know of it.
Why would you hang an engine in a farm? Yeah. Like, why would you hang an engine?
And it was so many.
What if the engine killed your daughter? You'd hang that engine.
Also, it's really nice that they managed to murder him in the way that he murdered his...
Yes, with car parts.
Mm-hmm. Car parts.
Car parts. He finally got it back.
But let's keep this in mind, because I'm almost positive. We are in a barn at the end of this movie at Kristen Chenoweth's house.
Yep. Yeah.
So he is... There's a lot of engine hanging in her barn.
Yeah.
It's not like it's where he fixes his car.
That's her side hobby.
Yeah. So we're to presume that Kristen Chenoweth, who I believe is a single woman.
Yes.
A vice president.
Has like some sort of tractor engine hanging in her barn?
Yeah, she's a weekend farmer.
And not just hanging way up.
There is no reason to ever get the engine that high.
Well, there is nobody would ever do that.
Unless you were hoisting it to the second floor for storage
and
to get it out.
A substantial part of this fight happens during a gasoline fire.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yes, which they are clearly safe from in like a circle of no fire. Obviously, we had an opinion about this movie, but there are people out there that had a different opinion. It's now time for second opinions.
What if they said you had cancer? What if they said you had AIDS? Would you take that for an answer? Sit back and call it a day. Or would you get a second opinion?
All right, these are 5-star reviews culled from Amazon.
How are our themes coming? Are people sending in themes?
Oh, we have amazing themes. What we just heard right there is a brand new one. Yeah, we have tons of themes.
Great.
This is from Teddy Tao. Now, most people will... kind of tell you the whole movie, but I think this one was worth it. Oh my. Jennifer Lopez never makes a bad movie. She hits it home again with this one. Going through a separation with her husband, she meets her next door neighbor, who is much younger. He knows she's very lonely and needing a man, and he kindly takes advantage of that situation. They have a one-night encounter, she breaks it off, and then it gets very, very, very ugly. That leads her husband and son getting involved, and then in the end, the neighbor gets killed, and Jennifer and her husband and son all get out of the burning barn alive. It's a great movie. Some sexual content is in the movie. They could have left that out, but I do like the movie. 5 stars.
Wow.
Wait a minute. What would the movie be without the sex?
Yeah. That's the entire movie. And by the way,
also spoiler alert, for the movie.
Yeah, way big giant spoiler.
Like really, the friend dies and they make it out of the barn alive.
And then this one is, this was from Stephanie E. Horn.
How about Stephanie Horn E.?
Ooh, I like that.
Oh, boom.
She writes simply, the title of the review is Playing with Fire, and writes, not a good idea to cross that age gap. I would, but that's me. 5 stars.
Yeah. Because she is Stephanie Horny.
And then this is from Heidi Bailey, who also gives it 5 stars.
By the way, lesson not learned from the movie.
No, not at all. And then Stephanie Bailey gives it 5 stars and simply writes, volume was too low.
What? But that's...
that's a review.
What?
That still gave it 5 stars. Volume was too low.
Couldn't find remote.
The volume of sex scenes?
I don't know.
No, I think the sound.
I think the sound of the movie.
The volume of the sex scenes.
I'd like to see those person's other reviews, and maybe all of the reviews are like, the sound was too low. Yeah. It just turns out their TV is broken. Yeah.
They don't know how to turn on their speaker.
Or they're slowly going deaf don't know it.
We just couldn't review.
There is no sound in this movie.
But the first review.
This movie sounded silent, much like my husband and everything in the world.
June and I once stayed in this like, oh, go ahead.
Her first review is Jurassic Worlds couldn't figure out how to turn this down. Deafeningly loud.
Too loud. 1 star. June and I were in a like this kind of like hotel hostel thing when we first came out to LA, and they had a DVD player, and we put in that movie Manchurian Candidate, the remake.
Yep.
And it was pitch black, and we'd always like, you could see figures, and it was like, wow, it's a really cool artistic choice. And we were like, watch the entire movie like without being able to see the figures. And then we realized that the brightness was all the way down, so We watched the movie and justified it to ourselves. Like, wow, Jonathan Demme's like a real genius. He's making it like
hard to see
the things. Like, it's murky because this idea is a murky idea.
That's amazing.
It was like the shitty TV in a shitty hotel that we like, and we gave it so much credit. Like, oh, it's a really interesting filmmaker.
I love that when you justify things like that, especially because you do it to someone to make it seem like nothing's wrong.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like, I remember I went to a concert once when I was, like, I went to see The Replacements when I was in ninth grade, I think, with a girl that I was, like, just so in love with, but who, like, thought of me like a brother. And there were, the bands kept coming on stage, and I kept being like, this is them! And but it then was not, because there was like four opening bands. But there was such an anxiety around which band is going to be the replacement. And I kept being like declaratively like, this is them. And we would like enjoy a couple of songs. I think I know this one. And then it was like none of them were the replacements. And then when the replacements came on, it was very obvious it was the replacements. Like they made a big deal about it.
Well, did we cover everything that everyone wanted to talk about? Anything left?
I think so.
All right. Well,
I'm trying to think. You piece of fucking shit.
Oh, my God. Poor Chenoweth.
Yeah. Chenoweth
also,
really.
Also, Chenoweth's boyfriend seemed like a real piece of shit. I felt really bad for Chenoweth.
Yeah.
She needed a boy next door.
I thought it ended very odd. I thought maybe they was going to maybe let us think like there was no body in the barn. And like, obviously, they wouldn't make a sequel, but it'd be fun to have that little like.
You also.
A jump up moment, anything.
Jump up
anything. You also don't see like any aftermath. You don't see like them 6 months later, like, okay, we're all together now. We lived.
The movie ended like someone's like, hey, I gotta go. We gotta go. We're like, oh shit. All of a sudden, like, wait, we left? The movie's over? Like, I literally was like,
there is something missing. Like, just a shot of them happy or a shot of the barn being burned. Or
a helicopter shot of like, yeah.
Just a pull out. Yeah, it's just some artistic pull out. But it's just, it was like they get out of the barn and the credits start.
And they immediately go back to the flashback scene so they can show you more sex scenes again.
Yes.
Like, you know, like immediately. Like, they get that, they make their money in that sex
scene.
What
a weird trailer thing to show the sex scenes again. I've never seen anything
like
that.
Three times.
As the director pointed out, she's got an amazing body for a
44, got twins, and she still goes to gym. You know I like it.
Oh, yeah.
Heather, anything we could tell the people? They can follow you on Twitter, of course, Heather Ann Campbell.
At Heather Campbell on Twitter. And you can kind of get to everything from there. Yeah. You know, Instagram and all that shit. I don't know.
Ben?
Yeah.
Sure, you can follow me on Twitter. I have this Instagram called Kylie Jenner Does Stuff, which is bleeding followers. So if anybody wants to follow it.
I would like to follow that. So it's just Kylie Jenner just doing things?
I try to take her selfies and then make it look like she's doing something either more satisfying with her life, like hanging a picture of Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the wall, or just like something garbage that she would never do, like, you know, making macaroni and cheese or eating pork rinds.
And it's just called Kylie Jenner Does Stuff?
Kylie Jenner Does Stuff.
All right. I'm going to follow that immediately.
That's
Jason?
Great.
I'm in an episode, and June is in as well, Lady Dynamite on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Great show.
So it's Maria Bamford's show with Pam Brady and Mitch Hurwitz. It's a terrific show. That's definitely worth checking out. That's about it.
And I'll plug
And if you're on a plane, watch How to Be Single.
I did. Jason's great in it. and I told him that the other night, in all honesty.
Everybody is now watching that movie on planes. It's so hilarious. People keep coming to me, hey, I just saw you in some movie. I was like, were you on a plane? if you want to get on a plane and watch me make out with Alison Brie,
if you're going across country, that's a great way to spend a couple hours. You can watch Filthy Preppy Teens. That is my show that I co-created on the Full Screen app. It's a brand new app, kind of like Netflix for millennials. It's all up there now. Eight episodes are all up and available. If you want to follow our show, follow us on Twitter at HDTGM. You can follow us on Facebook. You know how to do that. And then also, if you think that we didn't talk about something here that deserves to be talked about, leave it in our Earwolf message boards, and we will talk about it on the mini episode.
And if you want, write us more themes for second opinions.
Yes.
Right, you know, anything you
we
feel
like.
We
always want more music.
Yeah, we always want more music.
And if you have felt like we haven't talked about something on the podcast, you can leave me a voicemail message at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's PAULASK, not Paul Ask. Or you can leave it for us on our Earwolf forum. We will play it in our new and improved mini episodes. If you haven't been listening to our minis, you got to check them out. They're rich. They're full. Sometimes they give you false information like watch Dragonheart. But Besides that, they are full of great stuff from all of you. So thank you to everybody here at Earwolf. A big thank you to Avril Halley for cutting these clips, as always, just perfect. And Nate Kiley for not only watching the movie, but watching the DVD director's commentary of the movie. Thank you all, and Marissa Zeitz for putting it all together for me every day. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye. Look. I know how you're feeling. You're overwhelmed. There's new music coming out every day. There's new movies coming out every week. There's new TV shows to keep up with. Which are worthy of binge watching and which should you just throw out in the trash? Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm here to help with a podcast called The Dinner Party Download. I love The Dinner Party Download. It's one of my favorite podcasts. It's like a fast, funny cheat sheet of all the terrific things in pop culture. Plus, the hosts, Rico and Brendan, bring you amazing chats with cool people like Amy Schumer, Pharrell Williams, Viola Davis. They all come on the show. They're funny, they're interesting, and you can get this podcast right on iTunes. It's called The Dinner Party Download. I think if you like this show, you'll probably check it out. Choose any episode because they're all great. Every show has the smartest recommendations that will make you seem like a smarter, better informed person. And when you dig it, subscribe to it. You'll be glad that you did. This is me telling you to check out one of my favorite podcasts, The Dinner Party Download. It's right on iTunes. Do it. And just do this week's because it's current. Thanks again to CISO for sponsoring today's show. Only CISO lets comedy aficionados stream handpicked, ad-free, on-demand comedy from the comfort of their favorite device and location. CISO's got all of NBC's late-night shows. The next day, fresh and new stand-up every day of the year. Original series from the funniest people on earth like Wyatt Cenac, The Upright Citizens Brigade, and coming soon, Dan Harmon's Harmon Quest. All for $3.99 a month. All the best comedy in one place. Don't believe it? CISO for yourself now. For free, no credit card required.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
It's Ashir
and Nicole
from Best Friends.
Our podcast has been out for a few months.
If you haven't listened to it,
you should.
We've already asked the big questions in life.
Imagine if we could lay eggs.
Okay, sure. I guess we...
Wouldn't that be funny if you could eat from yourself?
No, because that's like cannibalism.
Not when you eat yourself.
What?
Hmm?
Answer listener questions.
Hi, Nicole and Sashir. What happens if Sashir dies first? I mean, I've never thought of it.
Well...
I would be so sad.
Oh no, Nicole. I'm not gonna die.
Take BuzzFeed quizzes. Let's pick 8 foods and we'll give you a sex position to try.
Whoa.
This is wild.
Plus, we bring on other funny best friends to talk about their friendship.
I almost want to cry. I don't know why that really made me feel emotional, but
it's because it's pure to talk about friendship.
It's nice.
It's so nice.
It's like so rare to like articulate it, but she's always there for me. Like I think she's just somebody who
Oh, I love this. I love it so much.
Oh my god.
It's really sweet.
Best Friends with Nicole Byer and Sashir Zameda is new every Wednesday.
On Stitcher,
Apple Podcasts,
Spotify, or wherever
you get
your
podcasts.
Listen.
Oh my god,
to it.